I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up? What's happening? Craig Hoffman with you for Overtime. It is a loaded, stacked show. We'll have a team owner on. We'll talk about all the teams in town. We'll talk about some breaking news, and we'll talk about history. If that doesn't get you sold for the next, 3 hours? 2.5 hours? 2 hours. 2.5 hours. Math was never my strong suit. Then I don't know what will. So here's what we got coming up at the top of the hour. Damon Amendolara, CBS Sports Radio. You hear him on the Odyssey Sports Minutes. You get him for more than a minute this time. He's going to join us for a whole segment. He's firing off Tebow takes. He's got some perspective on Russell Westbrook and the history that we... But doesn't it feel like that's exactly what we're going to get tonight? It's not just... Like, oh, Russell Westbrook could make history in one of those, like, maybe it'll happen far-fetched sometime in the next 2 weeks. It's like, no, he's going to get a triple-double tonight. No Brad Beal. History on the line. He's getting it tonight. Let's be honest. We'll talk about it more in a second. So we got Damon at 7. Sam Pell on the Caps. Tarek was just great. If you missed Tarek, you got the rewind feature with Grant and Danny. You can also just... have a little bit of patience. And at 7:30 tonight, Sam Pell from the Washington Post will join us. Then, at 8 o'clock, the team owner. You may have seen some major news today involving Alex Ovechkin. He is now a part owner. No, he's not the team owner we're going to have on. But he is amongst the newest investor group in the Washington Spirit, the local women's soccer team of the NWSL. Because I used to work there, nice little perk is... They tend to answer my calls, or in this case, emails. And we have the majority owner, Steve Baldwin, on the show. So if you've never, you've seen all these celebrity ownership groups coming up in all different aspects of sports. And if you have ever wondered how one of those comes together, I asked Steve. We recorded a little bit earlier today. I can tell you it was very insightful and interesting. And we're going to play it for you at 8 o'clock. And then at 8:30, we will talk to Maria Torres from The Athletic about the Washington Nationals, who should have had a good weekend and had a bad one instead. A little bit of breaking news that we'll touch on at the end of the show. Kenny Mayne is leaving ESPN, which is not like significant in the grand context of the world, but it's an excuse to tell funny Kenny Mayne stories, and I have a pretty good one. So we'll do that at 8:45 before we leave tonight. So that's what we got lined up for the show. The other more significant in the world of sports breaking news in terms of imminent sporting things is a major injury in the NBA that has a trickle-down effect on the Washington Wizards. That would be that Jaylen Brown, the all-star guard slash forward, all-star wing, we'll go with that, for the Boston Celtics, has a torn ligament in his left wrist and is out for the season. So again, the breaking news, in short, Jaylen Brown is out for the season. He is awesome. And the Celtics this year have not exactly been awesome. They've had their moments. He has had some moments. Jason Tatum has had some moments. But they are only, with all of the talent that they have on that team, with Brown, Tatum, Kemba, and company, 35 and 33, sitting in the seventh spot, currently play-in territory in the Eastern Conference. They're two games behind Miami and Atlanta, who are sitting tied at 5-6 with dead identical records. And then... behind them, two games behind, is Charlotte. And then a game behind Charlotte, three games behind Boston, are the Washington Wizards. So that is something certainly to keep an eye on as the Wizards close in on the end of their regular season. Now, of course, they're dealing with their own injury bugaboo in the form of Bradley Beal's left hamstring. And they've got Atlanta twice, Cleveland, and then that game against Charlotte could be massive to end the season. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games left. You got to go three to make it up to get the top seed in the play-in tournament and catch Boston, who is now without Jaylen Brown. Is that a tall task? Absolutely. Is it impossible? No. But here's the other thing. Charlotte could also catch them. And if Washington stays where they are right now in the standings, then at 9, well, that means they get 8 in the playoff or in the play-in series. And if Beal can get healthy, you could wind up playing a Jaylen Brownless. Never thought I'd have to say that. Just discovered it's a tongue twister. Jaylen Brownless, Boston Celtics. Or honestly, like as you play against Indiana tonight with only a half game lead and you're 3 games clear of Chicago at the 11th spot, who technically hasn't been eliminated yet, but they've got a tall task to try and catch you. Let's say Boston holds on over these last 5-6 games, whatever they have left, and Indiana passes you and you go 10-7. And now no Jaylen Brown for Boston. How do you like the Wizards' chances in that series? I think you like them a lot better than you do with Jaylen Brown. You only have to figure out how to guard Kemba, which you stick Russ there and see what happens. And then Tatum, and you probably stick Rui there. Brad certainly would take some turns, and those two have known each other since Jason Tatum was like 8. Growing up in St. Louis, the story's well told, obviously. Brad used to babysit Tatum, basically, and they work out together in St. Louis, yada, yada, yada. So, that's, I mean, enormous. Not to mention the fact that when you flip the court the other way, obviously, like, they've got Marcus Smart, they've got good defenders, but Jaylen Brown is a menace defensively. And if all of a sudden he's not available to guard Brad Beal, that's a big freaking deal for the Boston Celtics in a potential playoff matchup with the Washington Wizards. So, huge, enormous, massive breaking news out of Boston tonight that really, like, as an NBA fan, stinks. Because Jaylen is still, like, what, 23 probably? How old is Jaylen Brown? And he's already this good. Jaylen Brown, I'm going to guess he's 24. And he's out for the year. Tatum, who's still like 22. That's a team that still has a chance, if they keep it together, to be really good for a long time. But for the imminent and the chances that Boston and Washington match up in the playoffs, purely from a competitive standpoint, that is quote-unquote good news for the Washington Wizards. All right, so again, coming up on the show, and actually, I'm curious of this because I also want to talk about Russell Westbrook a little bit as he's on the verge of history. But in having conversations with Wizards fans and just general Washingtonians over the last week and a half, I would say, maybe 2 weeks, I think people's attitudes have changed towards this Wizards team. Winning does a lot. But I think people are starting to really enjoy this team. And for all the anger that was at the start of the year for the John Wall trade, and I understood and participated in that anger, it has been really interesting to see people start to buy in. So, have you found yourself investing more time in the Washington Wizards? 800-636-1067, and will you be watching tonight as Russell Westbrook tries, and most likely does, make history? 800-636-1067. Talking to you on the Gambit DC listener lines next on The Fan. It's overtime on The Fan. I'm Craig Hoffman with you at 800-636-1067. Those are the Gambit DC listener lines. On the BetQL guest line at the top of the hour, Damon Amendolara, DA from the DA show. Really original name. fantastically thought out. He's going to join us to talk about Tim Tebow signing, about Russell Westbrook on the verge of making history, and that is indeed what we are going to talk about right now. And I talked about this a little bit late in the week on Friday when I was in, but it feels obviously a little bit different and more imminent now. Westbrook's numbers are fascinating because they are just so ridiculously impressive, specifically over the last month and change at this point. So coming into tonight's game, he obviously is tied with Oscar Robertson and is on the verge of single-handedly holding the record for triple-doubles in his career with 181, and he has a long way to go in said career. Will it always be this level? No. Will he eventually slow down? Of course. But Westbrook, over the last, this is 19 games, since the starting with the win over, and I could even go back farther. If I include one more game in this, it was also a triple-double, because, of course, which would include a two-point loss against Toronto. And actually, we'll go ahead and do that. We'll do his last 20 games. And because I remember that game. That game was a nutty game in which he had a bad turnover late. I know and remember it because I was sitting in this chair while it happened. And Ryan, you were sitting in that chair, weren't you? Yeah. Ryan Clary on the ones and twos tonight, boys and girls. So in that game, Westbrook had a triple-double, of course, 23 points, 14 assists, 12 boards, and, or sorry, 14, 11, and, or 23, 14, 11. It's really hard sometimes to tell the Westbrook numbers if you're not directly staring at the column because they're all so large. But that goes back to April 5th. And by the way, in a portion of the schedule where the Washington Wizards have played on April 5th, 7th, 9th, 10th, 12th, 14th, 16th, 17th, 19th, 21st, 23rd, 25th, 26th, 28th, 30th. You're talking about basically every other day into May 1st, 3rd, 5th, 6th, 8th. Westbrook has not missed a single game. He's averaged 38.5 minutes a game. He's shooting 45% from the field, 30% from three, 73% from the line, averaging 22 points, 13.5 assists, 14 rebounds a game. Also 1.5 steals, also 4.8 turnovers. Plus minus, he's a plus six, or the Wizards are plus six when he's on the floor. His game score average, starting to get into the advanced stats, is a 22.1, which is pretty good. Does he have some stinkers in there? Sure. The game against Toronto, technically it's a stinker. Game score for reference, I said his average is 22.1. It was a 9.9. But you know what? He had 13, 17, and 17. That's a good stinker. He's had a triple-double in nearly every single one of those games. And in the games that he's missed it, he's had either 9 assists or 9 rebounds multiple times. You hate that game where he had 42, 10, and 9. Darn it, no triple-double. And what I love about what Westbrook has done, obviously the team has won quite a bit. I believe they're 15-5 during that 20-game stretch. But these numbers being so large have to do with the pace with which the Wizards play. Well, he's the one driving the pace. He gets the ball. He goes. He immediately has his head up. He's always looking, how immediately can we score? And the pressure that puts on a defense is immense. It comes with mistakes. His turnover numbers are higher than you'd like. But you live with that because the assist numbers are higher than everyone else. The rebound numbers are insane. And he has actually tempered his scoring into a more happy medium where, yeah, he's averaging 18 field goal attempts a game, but that's not outrageous considering how fast they play and how often the ball is in his hands. He's also only averaging 3.5 threes a game, which for a guy who shoots 30% is pretty ideal. You have to shoot them often enough that the defense respects it. You can't shoot them so often that they laugh as you take it. The historical context is harder, but I think I had a really good and interesting call on Friday. Someone asked, what, like, is it easier now than when Oscar did it? Like, how do you try to compare the two? And the answer is you don't. Jerry Brewer wrote about this in the Post today, about how the NBA now has 75 years of experience or of history, and it's time that we started celebrating instead of always comparing it. The comparison is that Oscar and Russell are the same and that they are doing it when no one else is. That's the mark of greatness. That is why LeBron is LeBron, why Jordan is Jordan, why Russell is Russell, why Magic is Magic. Because for each of those eras, Russell in the 60s, there really was nobody in the 70s who was quite like this. Kareem, kind of, towards the end, started to come in. And then obviously he won a ton more titles in the 80s when he was with Magic and the Lakers. And you can make another argument, really, that Kareem might belong on this list. But bear, just roll with Magic for the time being. I know, controversial take. Magic Johnson was great. Magic in the 80s, Jordan in the 90s, Kobe to a lesser degree in the 2000s. Because Duncan is also right there, and also the first three for Kobe are definitely thanks to Shaq, who was the best player on those teams, with all due respect to how great Kobe was. Like, Shaq was the best player in the league. Kobe was probably, like, the second or third. But, like, Shaq was still the best player in the league for those especially the first two titles that they won in L.A. But then, you know, you get into the 2010s, and it's obviously the decade of LeBron. He's won four. And challenged a Warrior super team in other finals that his team had no business competing in. They all were doing things that nobody else was. They were just on a different level. And that, to me, is what is so remarkable and impressive about Westbrook. Yes, you can say it hasn't always positively affected winning. No, he's not the best player in the league. No, he's not the best player at his position in the league. Sometimes it's really frustrating. Sometimes it's felt like he's hunted some stats. But you want to know what no one else has done in the decade plus that Russell Westbrook has been in the NBA? Average a triple-double. And he's done it for like 4 or 5 years now. Or been right on the verge when he hasn't quite hit the mark. And the injury earlier this year clearly affected him. But right now, this dude is playing unbelievable basketball. And he deserves that credit without just simply going, who cares about triple-doubles? Are they nice, fancy round numbers that play easily in our brain? Sure. But you know who else is hitting those marks? Nobody. Greg Hoffman with you on The Fan. What does Damon Amendola, CBS Sports Radio, make of the Westbrook Statsapalooza and the history that is on the horizon? Plus, what's he make of the Tebow signing? Talk about that next with DA on The Fan. It's overtime on The Fan, brought to you by Mervis Diamond Importers, the ringleader for the latest in engagement rings and wedding bands. Greg Hoffman with you tonight until 9 p.m. And hey, look, I got company on the BetQL guest line. For the first time in a long time, it is a pleasure to welcome in my friend, truly, honest to God, he's my friend, Damon Amendola from the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio. You can listen to it nationwide, everywhere, internationally, perhaps even on the Odyssey app, Damon.
Hoff, good to talk to you. Indeed, you're right. We are huge, huge in Guam. So you can listen to us wherever you are across the globe.
I'd heard some things from Switzerland, too. Those true?
Very big there. Huge. Yeah. Big Federer fans.
Huge, huge Federer fans. Sometimes you even wear the headband, you know?
Yes. That's how I get ready in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to keep the hair out of your eyes. Mraz would, but he doesn't have any hair. So, you know,
that's right.
What can
you
do? Believe it or not, this is, you discussing your international audience, real or fake, is not why we're here with Damon on the show. You were tweeting about the Tim Tebow signing, and I want to give you a chance to warm up your take for the morning show. What did you make when you saw that Tim Tebow, yes, that Tim Tebow, the one who's really good on television, used to be really good at college football, was not very good at NFL football, is going to try NFL football again, this time as a tight end for his college coach in Urban Meyer?
Yeah, I think it's embarrassing. I really do. I think it's embarrassing. And I have been a proponent of the Jaguars giving Urban Meyer that job. I think Urban has proven everywhere that he's gone, he has been able to create a culture of winning. Now, has it always been on the up and up? Perhaps not. The way that he left Florida obviously leaves a lot to be desired. What happened on his staff, by the time he was at the end of Ohio State. That's questionable as well, but he has always won and won big. And for a Jaguars franchise that has not been doing that for very, very long, I thought this is a great fit. Makes a lot of sense. I applauded them hiring him. However, this Tim Tebow thing is utterly absurd. I mean, imagine being a 24-year-old tight end, okay? You have committed your entire life to playing the position. You know every nuance of the position. You are committed to blocking. You are committed to catching in traffic. You're committed to trying to take on linebackers and safeties. And you understand NFL playbooks. You were really, really good in college. You also have been killing yourself staying in football shape. You're 24 years old, and you're just trying to get tryouts. You're just dying to get tryouts. There's only 32 teams and maybe two tight ends per team, three tight ends per team, only a few snaps per guy. And then you watch Tim Tebow get this job. Now, I realize it's kind of a glorified tryout or a roster, you know, camp spot. And so it's not, he's not starting on Sundays yet. But there are guys 10 years younger than Tim Tebow who have played the position their entire lives, understand NFL playbooks inside and out, and are going to watch a guy that has just spent 4 years, you know, falling around the baseball diamond in the minor leagues, just come in and take a job, take a roster spot, at least for camp. I think it's embarrassing. And if Tim Tebow was 24, instead of 34, okay. If Tim Tebow had played football this entire time, okay. If Tim Tebow had ever played tight end, okay. But how do you rectify or rationalize all of those things not being true and still bringing him in? There's not another 20-something-year-old tight end that's a better possibility than him?
So I agree with you in part. There is one part where, having just covered the league and seen so many mediocre, bad, horrible 90th roster guy tight ends by NFL standards, fine college players, way better at football than I might ever be at anything, but the NFL is really, really hard. And if you can't beat out Tim Tebow, then that's on you. If you can't beat out Tim Tebow because of all the reasons you just said, to me, that's on you at that point. But the 34 versus 24 thing, that is interesting to me, and does certainly, to me, put a point in your column of, okay, well, at least the 24 guy maybe has a chance of getting better. 34-year-old Tim Tebow, who knows what kind of shape he's in, all that kind of stuff. But if you're Urban Meyer, if you could ask Urban Meyer, why did you do this? Forget your opinion on it. What do you think his reasoning is? Like, if you tried to earnestly give him credit and answer your own question, why do you think he did this?
So my specific question to Urban Meyer would be, what percentage of this decision is because he's Tim Tebow? And that has a lot of different shoots on it. Number one, the celebrity aspect, which means maybe they like a little camp buzz. The Jaguars have been irrelevant for a really long time. Now they suddenly have Urban Meyer, Trevor Lawrence, a fun young team, and Tim Tebow in camp. Maybe suddenly this is the perfect way to sell some tickets. Number two, Tim Tebow obviously has a relationship with Urban Meyer. So is it just a friend thing where I'm doing a helping hand, a favor for a friend of mine who won me a lot of football games? And number three, how much of it is the mystique of Tim Tebow, that when Tim Tebow is around, everybody always says, you know, good things happen. He's going to surprise you. He's going to do something remarkable. You know, he's a great teammate, or any of those types of things. He's really coachable. What percentage of this is Tim Tebow? Because if he was Jim Tebow, does he get this job? And the answer is absolutely not. And Hoff, you are discounting one huge thing when you said, I've been around a lot of bad, you know, tight ends in the NFL. If you ever covered a Washington football camp and they had invited to training camp a 34-year-old athlete who had never played tight end before and had been bouncing around the minor leagues in baseball and given him this spot, you would have been offended. Yes, there's fifth string tight ends in camps that are not good by NFL standards, but there is absolutely no validity to his resume getting even this far. That's what bothers me about this. If you can't beat out Tim Tebow, that's a problem, of course. He shouldn't have this opportunity because he's not qualified for this opportunity.
I did see some of those tight ends, and they were horrendous.
But what does horrendous mean? I mean, can they shed a blocker? Can they catch over the middle? Do they understand a tight end route tree?
No. They get their ass kicked as blockers all the time. They're terrible route runners. And look, the tight ends that were in camp that were, like, not going to make it, they also had it tough because they're running routes next to Jordan Reed, who was the best route runner in the league. Vernon Davis, who was around for 100 years. Like, I had some pretty good ones that I covered, especially in training camp before those dudes got hurt. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, I look, you're right. He has absolutely no resume other than they wanted him to play tight end a decade ago, and he refused to flip then because he was technically a first-round quarterback, and he wanted a chance to play quarterback, and that's his right, and if he doesn't want to, he can go play baseball. But if he does have some understanding of route trees and blocking schemes, which you need to as a quarterback, there's a chance he knows the position better than some of the dudes I saw play it in training camp. Yes, I will honest to God tell you that.
But by virtue of what? He's never played tight end. Why would you assume he might know the position better than somebody who's played tight end?
Because knowing what to do is... Oh, look, I'm not telling you he's going to be good, because knowing what to do is half the battle, right? There's plays that I understood what the guys were supposed to do. That doesn't mean they could have given me pads and a helmet and I could go do it. And that part of your argument, 100% for Tim Tebow, like, yes, he's NFL fast and that he runs a sub 5 40-yard, or like probably like a 4.7 40-yard dash. He is big.
Does
he is strong.
He? He's 34.
I would think so still.
Does he? Do we have any evidence he's still an athlete?
Actually, that's what I want. You know, Damon, you're onto something. I want the Tim Tebow combine. I will run it back. Whatever he ran 12 years ago, run it back.
Well, I mean, okay, so does he run as fast as a 25-year-old tight end with the same build and the same weight and measurements? Does he lift, you know, his squats and his bench press and his leaping ability? Are all of those things the same as they were 13 years ago? And if they're not, are they in the same vicinity as a guy that just was in the combine? So, like, what is this that if you played quarterback, you somehow know how to play tight end better than anybody else? Like Tim Tebow.
No, not better, but I'm saying, like, if you are a quarterback who has a good mental understanding of the game, you're the one who knows exactly where you want your tight ends to run the routes. You know that, you know, this route is five steps and out, or, you know, the timing of it. There are benefits. And I've talked to guys like Randall Cobb about this, is a former college quarterback who converted wide receiver. And obviously, look, the physical traits of Randall is why he was able to do it. And that's kind of part of what we're debating with Tebow here. But there was an understanding that Cobb had, especially with Aaron Rodgers, that, okay, we're able to identify coverage quickly. It's zone coverage. I know that I'm the third read. My timing needs to be a little bit different. Whereas a lot of these younger receivers and tight ends who don't have that quarterback experience of understanding progressions and those kinds of things, or even setting blocking assignments, which quarterbacks also do, that they have a little bit of a leg up, where, like, these guys who just played receiver or tight end in these spread, very simple college systems just go run as fast as they can, and they're so used to beating the guy in front of him who's some terrible college corner that they really don't have that nuanced understanding in the NFL. I'm not saying that's a strong pro Tebow argument. I'm just saying that, like, if he's going to do it, those are the small things that are going to be written in the flowery profile pieces of why it ultimately, the 1% that it could work, paid off.
So there are two counters to that. Number one, are we sure he understands quarterback?
No, that's 100% fair.
That's kind of a big leap, because was he a great college quarterback? Absolutely. But that offense was incredibly rudimentary, so much so that their bread and butter play was him just jumping and throwing a dump pass 5 yards. That's not exactly how you play NFL quarterback, and every time he played NFL quarterback, he was a disaster. If anybody wants to cite that one playoff game against the Steelers with broken coverage, it's one throw. It is one freaking throw in his NFL career. He had three other teams that wanted him to play quarterback after that, and he busted at all three of them. So I'm not sure he knows how to play quarterback. Number two, at this level. Number two, does this just mean that you should take all college quarterbacks that won't make the NFL as quarterbacks and say, you should just convert. You should convert to some other roster spot because you understand the game better than anybody else, so you will have an inherent advantage? Because that doesn't happen a lot. Like you mentioned, Randall Cobb, Julian Edelman is an example of this. But it's not like, and Taysom Hill, it's not like we have a bunch of former quarterbacks running around at each back tight end and wide receiver
sure.
because they understood the game so much.
But most of them don't have the physical traits of whether it's the speed and quickness of a guy like Cobb or the physical prowess and you know, size of a Tebow or a Hill. You gotta have it all.
Well, I mean, okay, so Tebow was he's physically built.
He's very large.
There's a lot of those, like every quarterback before Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma was built a little bit like Tim Tebow, right?
Right, I mean, but Tebow can at least run. Like he's large and can run. So that's unique. Look, I'm just saying it's not an affront to humanity. Let me ask you this question though, because I do think this is like separating the real outrage from the fake outrage and the real consequences for them, the talk radio shenanigans that we do every single day. Like, I do think that if he shows up in Jacksonville and he stinks, which even with all the things I've said, is absolutely the most likely option. What does it do to the other guys in that locker room? You've been around the NFL long enough, coaches, players, assistants, everything. From the assistants on Urban's staff to other guys in that locker room, what does it do if he shows up and he's not any good and it's just like, oh, cool, Urban's buddy got a shot?
Well, I think you have to cut him so that you save some face and don't keep around a guy that's wasting a roster spot who's obviously terrible. And you know, part of the Tebow thing is infuriating simply because for 15 years almost, people have pled and called for more opportunities for Tim Tebow. Like somehow he didn't get enough of a shot where it was, oh, well, you know, they didn't really want him and they wanted him to be an H-back but not a quarterback and they don't really believe in him and he can play baseball. Why wouldn't he have that opportunity? And he should be in the major league. The people just didn't understand that he wasn't good enough for all of those things. He got more opportunities than he ever deserved. And now we're looking at, again, something that has never happened before. That's probably a publicity stunt, but, you know, might be rooted in a little bit of football. But again, is undeserving of what he has ever done. I mean, nobody ever takes a guy that's been out of football for 10 years and says, you're 34, why don't you try out a new position? So all of that makes this a little bit more volatile than simply, oh, who cares about the Jaguars' fifth tight end? But if he really stinks and he's kept around, yeah, I think Urban Meyer loses credibility. And I will tell you just from firsthand knowledge of talking to people that covered closely on a day-to-day basis when he was in minor league baseball, Tim Tebow, there was a level of frustration and rolling their eyes at the minor league level, not necessarily because he was wasting a roster spot. I mean, you know, Tim Tebow sold tickets and there's a value there in minor league baseball. I worked in minor league baseball. If you get a guy that's going to sell 5,000 tickets or 2,000 tickets or bring people in for 2-for-1 hot dog night, that's great. But, you know, Tim Tebow hitting 184 in Double A, you know, they're players, they're like, he's going to get interviewed again, and we're going to have to talk about him again, and he didn't do anything again, and it's still like we're the Tim Tebow circus. And I think that can happen, less so in the NFL because it's going to be more about Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer and an NFL team. But, you know, it's just going to be guys that roll their eyes like, well, why are we wasting our time with Tim Tebow here because he's not an NFL player? And I don't know if the entire locker room checks out. I heard Ryan Clark say something like that, or you know, I don't think an entire locker room goes like, oh my God, I can never play for Urban Meyer because Tim Tebow's here. It just makes the whole thing an annoyance because he's not really a legitimate football player.
That is 100% true. Having been in those scrums and watching other reporters be like, you're going to ask the, oh, and just watching the player be like, really? That's what we're doing today? So that absolutely is a thing. Damon Amendola, the DA show on CBS Sports Radio, mornings 6 to. They give you 4 hours now, or you just did 3?
Amazingly, they give me 4 full hours.
Wow,
yeah.
That's wild. What are they doing up there? 6 to 10 every weekday morning on CBS Sports Radio. Real quick on the way out, Russell Westbrook is likely to make history tonight because he's getting a triple double basically every night, and tonight is another night in which the Wizards play, and Bradley Beal is out, so you know he's going to have the ball in his hands even more. What have you made of Westbrook's, let's say even his last 20 games, the Wizards are 15-5, he's averaging a triple double, and is having truly one of the best stretches of his career. And, you know, putting that in the larger context of his career where he's about to break this triple-double record.
I think it's inspiring. I think it's incredibly impressive. And I don't really think that we understand as a modern NBA society just how great Russell Westbrook has been, because he hasn't played in the NBA Finals. And I wish that Thunder team with KD either stayed together with James Harden or was able to knock off the Warriors in 2016, I guess it was, because we always deserved to see, and Russell Westbrook deserved to see, what he could do when everything mattered. And since KD left, he's never really had a legitimate shot at doing so. And it's not that he's a flawless individual, and certainly, you know, there's been opportunities where he did not come up when he had to in big spots. But statistically speaking, you can't deny that he is one of the most incredible statistical players ever. And through fire and fury and want and desire, combined with talent and ability, he's historically great, historically, legendarily great. And I still don't think we properly appreciate him because he's still playing and he hasn't played in NBA Finals. Well, I guess he had won the NBA Finals.
Yeah,
but
they had the one, and then they decided to trade James Harden, and that really went well for Oklahoma City. Whoops.
Yeah.
Whoops. You can follow him at DA on CBS. Listen to him worldwide, Guam, Switzerland, everywhere, on the Odyssey app. Morning 6 to 10 on CBS Sports Radio. It's Damon Amendolara. Good to talk to you, my friend. I'll talk to you offline soon.
You too, huh? Catch up. Okay. Sounds good, bud. Thanks.
All right. See you. Bye. DA is the best. I worked for the Syracuse blog that he heads when I was in college, and that's when we met. I covered the NCAA tournament. When he was working in Boston, I covered the NCAA tournament when Syracuse played in Boston, and I slept on his couch. It's the kind of guy he is. He's like, yeah, come cover the tournament. Here's my couch. From what I remember, it was a comfy couch. So he's the best. Truly, honest to God, like, peel back the curtain. All jokes aside, you guys can probably hear, we have a really nice rapport. He's one of my mentors. He's one of the reasons I do this. So if you hate me, it's his fault. This segment is brought to you by Mervis Diamond Importers. Getting engaged, visit Mervis Diamond Importers with the most GIA diamonds waiting for you. Nobody beats Mervis. That's why the Washington Post named Mervis best place to buy a diamond. Mervis Diamond Importers financing is available. Go to MervisDiamond.com or call 1-800-HER-LOVE. We'll have Sam Pell at the bottom of the hour. Real quick, let's go to PJ, though, in Reston. PJ, thanks for holding. You're on the Fan.
Hey, guys, hope you're having a beautiful Monday. Yeah, it's Monday.
It is
Monday.
Somehow only Monday.
No. Let me tell you guys, so, you know, I think it's kind of cool that Tebow is going to try out with Jacksonville. I don't really think it's a distraction. The thing is, like, Tebow, I think people peg him all wrong. Is he going to be like a traditional starting quarterback? No way. He doesn't have the talent to do that. But I don't understand why he couldn't play a Taysom Hill type of a role in the offense. If Tebow were to be used like a Taysom Hill, a little bit like a Cordell Stewart, he could be a factor. Not only could he be a good like H-back, he could be a good quarterback just like a Taysom Hill. And I'm not even – I've always been a Tebow. I always liked Tebow. And it's not the religious thing. I'm a believer in God, not religion. And I've never understood this. Like, there's so many things going on with the world. The last thing we need to vent about is Tim Tebow. What's the harm in it? You know, if he's good enough, he'll make the team. If not, and like I said, if we really focus on him playing like a Taysom Hill kind of role, why wouldn't he thrive in that?
Because
he's bigger.
Because
he's
not as fast, and he's not as quick, and he's not as athletic, and he's not as good as Taysom Hill. If Tim Tebow gets drafted by the Saints, and the Taysom Hill role is invented by Sean Payton with the Saints a decade ago, as Damon said, maybe then you're looking at something. But the reality is, Damon's 100% right. He's 34. He's in baseball shape. And that is very different, that he hasn't made contact with someone playing in a decade. And now he's going to have to go block and learn. Like, blocking technique is hard for the best. Like, Jordan Reed, had he been healthy, is a Hall of Fame caliber tight end, right? That dude is talented. His footwork was the best as a route runner as maybe we've ever seen at that position. He couldn't figure it out how to block on a consistent basis. It's really hard. That's why. Could he work out? I don't know. I know that dude's going to try. And that's the thing with Tebow. He's hard to hate because, like, he just does it. Like, within his little circle, people keep giving him opportunities, and he tries really hard, and he goes about it the right way. But that doesn't mean he should be getting the opportunities. And it certainly doesn't mean he's going to succeed. So that's why. Because he's 34, and he's played more professional baseball than he has football. 800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take more calls as the show goes. But coming up next, Sam Pell of the Washington Post on the Capitals. Who can play anymore? Because they're all hurt. And who are they going to play in the playoffs? We'll talk to Sam next on The Fan. Craig Hoffman with you on Overtime on The Fan. Back we go to the BetQL guest line. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today. That is where we find, hey, look, it's another one of my friends, Sam Pell. From the Washington Post, at Samantha J. Pell on Twitter. How are you, Samantha J. Pell?
I'm good. How about you?
I am doing well. Unlike all of the Washington Capitals, I am feeling well. I am not injured. That is great. Is it fair to you to just ask you for the rundown and the latest? Do you have them all on the top, off the top of your head, or is it easier for you if I start naming names?
Yeah, let's try to run it down. If I miss someone, just let me know.
Okay, bang, let's go. This is a pop quiz.
All right, so TJ Oshie, he was injured in Saturday's game, left in late in the second period with a lower body injury. He did not practice today, so his status is still day-to-day for tomorrow's game against the Bruins. Alex Ovechkin is also still day-to-day with a lower body injury. You know, he had no restrictions today at practice, so the team says that, you know, obviously he's progressing. He was out there. He took normal line rushes, so maybe we do see him tomorrow against the Bruins. I would say he's more likely than Oshie at this point. So that's kind of the update with Alex. With Nicholas Backstrom and John Carlson, they both missed Saturday's game with lower body injuries. Both were at practice. It looked like Nicholas Backstrom was taking normal line rushes. That would signal that he's good to go for tomorrow. John Carlson was actually skating with Martin Saravari, a prospect on the Capitals, in line rushes. So maybe he's also less so inclined to play tomorrow. The Caps do have six healthy defensemen at this point, even without Carlson. So maybe you just give him another game to rest. He was a little bit banged up earlier this year. Justin Schultz is another guy. He came back last game after missing, I believe, 7 of the last 8 again. He should be good to go. Tom Wilson was also hurt on Saturday, but he came back, and he looked like a full participant in practice today. So overall, probably no Oshie tomorrow, and I would say, you know, probably game times on Ovechkin and Carlson.
She did it. Round of applause for Sam Pell, everybody. How many times have you done that today? That was impressive.
That was the first time I did it today.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm actually a little bit impressed too.
Yeah. You brought energy. You had everything. That was fantastic. All right. So let's summarize here in the form of a question. Obviously there's just one game left. How big of a deal is it to have that much of an injury list given potential time off before playoffs? You have obviously the game tomorrow. How much time will they have to get healthy and be whole? And how much of maybe some of the restrictions on some of these guys were purely like, no, they're hurt, versus we have one game left against a team we might play in the playoffs, and it might not even mean anything depending on another matchup that happens tonight elsewhere in terms of seedings?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, first and foremost, it's the game tonight against the Bruins and the Islanders. If basically anything other than an Islanders win in regulation means that the Capitals are going to play the Bruins in the playoffs. In that series, it's supposed to maybe start this weekend. There's rumblings it could start, you know, Saturday, Sunday. So that would be kind of a quick turnaround for the Capitals to play the Bruins. But it seems like everyone is trending in the right direction. I would say, you know, Nicholas Backstrom and John Carlson not playing on Saturday, you know, they are listed as lower body. Laviolette did say they didn't sit anyone. They didn't rest any players. But, you know, that was the second game off of back-to-back. This is a veteran group. They played a lot of games. I think even if they're a little bit dinged up, those guys are probably going to rest that day. And we'll see what happens on, you know, tomorrow for Tuesday. But definitely tonight's game against the Avs and the Bruins, I think, are going to dictate a lot for tomorrow. If the first-round matchup's already set against the Bruins, I'm not sure why you would, you know, want to push some guys to play tomorrow. But, you know, then again, if Ovi says he wants to play tomorrow, he wants to get a game in for the playoffs, same with Carlson or Backstrom. I just don't see a situation where Laviolette says, no, you're not going to play tomorrow.
Sam Pell, Washington Post, with us here on The Fan. This is Overtime. I am Craig Hoffman. Grant and Danny had Tarik on earlier. When they asked Tarik this question, Tarik answered, "I'm going to answer what's best for Tarik." Now, you're not Tarik, so I trust that I can actually ask you this and get an answer. If you're the Capitals, do you want the Bruins or the Islanders?
You want the Islanders just because of the record against the Islanders. You're 6-2 this year against them. I know that they're a little bit harder defensively sound. Obviously, you have Barry Trotz. They added some pieces at the deadline, but the Capitals did recently have that 3-game sweep against the Isles, 2 at Nassau, 1 at home, and it seems like maybe the Isles are trending a little bit downward, and the Bruins, I mean, create a whole bunch of problems for this Capitals team. I think fan-wise, spectator-wise, I think the Bruins would be a lot more electric. It'd bring a lot more energy. It's a different game when the Capitals play Boston versus when the Capitals play the Islanders. We saw 2-1-0 games against the Islanders in their last 3 matchups, and it just seems to be more defensively sound, you know, not a lot of shots on goal. So if I'm the Capitals, I probably want the Islanders just because you have had success against them this season, and Boston, I mean, has looked really, really good in the last few weeks.
Tarik answered that he wanted Boston because he thought Boston's a more fun city to visit. Just in case you care about Tarik. Nobody cares.
He's not wrong.
Well, there's that. Possibly more Taco Bells per square capita or per square mile, which is obviously very important to him. Last thing on the way out, and a two-part, just short-term, long-term question, and that is Evgeny Kuznetsov. Like, what is going on with him, mm-hmm. and what kind? Like, there is the long-term of what do you do? There's been reports now that they're going to look to trade him in the offseason. With that already floating out there, one, what have you been able to find out? And two, like, what does that do for this team, his psyche, what his teammates think and all of that for this immediate playoff run? Because obviously, if he's engaged and playing well, then that is a massive boost to their chances to make a run here in the playoffs.
Exactly. I think overall with Kuznetsov, the big thing or the big storyline with him has been, you know, obviously he was great in their cup run in 2018, and ever since then he's been inconsistent. So that's probably the biggest word you could use, is inconsistent, up and down. Even this season, you know, he ends up on the COVID list super early, ends up, you know, having COVID symptoms, kind of struggling to get back a little bit, you know, like a lot of athletes have talked about. And you know, he kind of struggled to get up to pace. All of a sudden, he, you know, is scoring basically a point per game, lots of goals, really feels engaged, really working well with Alex Ovechkin on the line. Peter Laviolette and Kuznetsov have a conversation about Kuznetsov wanting more minutes, wanting to be put in more big-time situations late in games. He's given that, does well again. And then all of a sudden, he starts to trend downward. He ends up in the COVID list again in this last week, doesn't play a game due to disciplinary reasons. And here we are. Now, the rumors start about, will the Capitals want to trade him in the offseason? And, you know, will he even be available for playoffs? And now it just seems like there's so many questions, and maybe the word has changed from inconsistent to problematic. And I'm not sure where the Capitals go from here, to be honest with him. I think, obviously, he is an electric player. He's great when he's on. But when he's up and down, it just doesn't seem to click. So I think he's probably one of the biggest storylines for the Capitals moving forward. And as of this point, you know, Kuznetsov and Samsonov are still on the COVID list, and the Capitals have one more regular season game to go, and their playoffs might start on Saturday. So I think a lot of questions are still up in the air, especially for him. But if they do get him back to the playoffs, I mean, he's going to bring a really big boost if he's on. And, you know, maybe if he's not, then that's just another distraction.
Great perspective. And, yeah, I think everyone's kind of holding their breath, hoping for the best. But who knows even what the best is at this point with him. Sam Pell, you can follow her on Twitter at Samantha J. Pell. Read her work at WashingtonPost.com/sports, or subscribe to the newspaper if that's still your thing. Sam, much appreciate the time as always, and I will talk to you soon.
Absolutely, thanks.
Sam, on the BetQL guest line, as all of our guests are, including the owner of the Washington Spirit. By the way, I didn't ask Sam what she thought about the fact that Alex Ovechkin's now a team owner. He bought in today to the Washington Spirit. We'll talk to the majority owner of the Spirit coming up at 8 o'clock. That is Steve Baldwin, Maria Torres on the Nats at 8:30. But coming up next, there's a story floating out on the interwebs about Washington football and the future of their training camp in Richmond. I have gotten some clarification on this, and I would like to share it with you next on The Fan. listen to us. You can listen to those guys down the hall over at 980. Sometimes when you listen to 980, you wind up with me anyway. Just how it works. The fun of being all under one roof. You can listen to our national shows like Damon Mendolara, 6 to 10 a.m. He joined the show earlier. If you missed it, you can use that Odyssey app to rewind. He was on at 7 o'clock. Go back. Listen, we had some fun with Tim Tebow. I kind of agitated him a little bit. Some of that may have been on purpose because he's my friend, and that's what we do. But it was a good time. Sam Pell, I texted Sam. I'm going to say this on the radio. I think that was the best hit that Sam's ever done with me. She was fantastic. So enjoy that if you missed, if you're just tuning in and want to rewind and get a little Capitals talk. Right now, though, before we talk to Steve Baldwin, the majority owner of the Washington Spirit, who today announced he went into business with, amongst others, Alex Ovechkin. That is a conversation we'll have at the top of the hour. I want to talk about this Washington football story that is meandering through the interwebs in regards to training camp. Now, as most of you know, training camp has been in Richmond for the better part of the last decade. And, of course, last year was a little bit different because of COVID. Training camp was at a facility in Ashburn. And this year will likely be mostly in Ashburn again, in part because the NFL is laying out certain protocols and it's just easier to have everybody at the team facility versus at a hotel in a different city. So the NFL might ban off-site training camps or extremely limit off-site training camps. Who knows? They also could put something like a vaccine limit on it, where if 80% or whatever percent they choose, that is a number I completely pulled out of thin air. I am not Anthony Fauci. That they talk about Captain Obvious. That they would say if X percent of your team is vaccinated, you can do this, and if not, you can't. You know, and that includes your staff and everything else. So that is something to be determined. That is certainly going to be on the table for the NFL as we go on through the summer and people get vaccinated in general. But the Richmond contract has long been something that is a point of consternation because Richmond had to pay, the city had to pay the Washington football team and its billionaire owner lots of money. I believe the number was like $500,000 a year. And it wasn't exactly like the city of Richmond was thriving. Their schools are incredibly underfunded. Someone who goes there on a somewhat regular basis, like they got roads that could use some paving and construction projects underway. They're trying their best to take care of them. I love Richmond. And the fact that they were paying all this money to Washington football was kind of insane. And so what has happened is the deal has expired with the city. And the state of Virginia, which, of course, is capitaled and, of course, is not actually the state of Virginia. It is the Commonwealth of Virginia, whose capital is in Richmond, is in negotiation with Washington football because the land that is being used for training camp is on state grounds anyway. So today, why I'm talking about this and what has been rummaging through the news is comments made by Richmond's mayor, and they go a little something like this. Quote, "I think there is some interest in bringing the Washington football team back to the city. I don't know how long they can actually be in the city in terms of the protocols that the NFL has laid out, but I welcome them back. You know, my hang up from day one has always been Bob," which I guess is the interviewer he was talking to, and we should, Ryan, if you can look up where these quotes came from so we can give them proper credit. I'm just reading them off Ben Standing's Twitter feed. This is from ESPN Richmond. And this is Richmond Mayor LeVar Stoney. So this is from ESPN Richmond today. So anyway, "You know, my hang up from day one has always been, I just don't believe that the city should be in the business of playing a top 20 or paying a top 20 franchise in the world in terms of wealth, some sort of stipend. I just don't believe in that. I think with that being settled, I believe that we can have a good time where they can come back to the city and the fans in the area can actually come and visit one of their favorite teams. I have no problem with that, but we'll see what they choose to do with these protocols in mind." And then the follow-up from ESPN Richmond, "Did the contract expire last summer, or is there another year/session? I think that means they have," this is again Richmond Mayor LeVar Stoney, "I think that means they have one more session with the state. I know our time has expired with them, but it becomes more of a state deal that they have. The Commonwealth and Washington team have a deal, but our deal has expired with the Washington team. So we no longer will be contributing any further to the team, but their sessions moving forward will be between them and the Commonwealth, but we welcome them back. And so, of course, the internet exploded with, Washington football's leaving Richmond. The mayor doesn't want them, despite the fact that very early on in this statement, the first thing he says is, I think there's some interest in bringing them back. I don't know how long they can actually be here, but I welcome them back. So that is the clarification. I've been texting back and forth a little bit with the actual mayor of Richmond, Michael Phillips, and he helped me out here and said, look, the Commonwealth thing is what to look out for. And I think this is honestly the best thing that could happen for all, right? The state has more money than the city of Richmond, and it is in the interest of the state. And before you go, well, the state has the same issues, right? They're trying to pay for education. They're trying to pay for, you know, state highways. They're trying to pay for all the things that a state government can pay for. And that's a lot. And obviously incredibly important infrastructure, literal, you know, construction level infrastructure to infrastructure like childcare or, you know, all the different things that a state can provide its citizens. But the difference is that the state, by trying to keep Washington football there for training camp, is making an investment to ultimately help their negotiations to keep Washington football there for games. While it wouldn't be in Richmond, Virginia is certainly interested, especially now that the name has changed and has become a little bit less of a don't touch that radioactive situation. Virginia is competing with DC and Maryland to get the football team there full time because the practice facility is already there and they would certainly love to keep it there. But the thought is wherever the new stadium is, DC or Maryland, the team's probably going to want to move their facility there as well, right? If they build this big, beautiful new stadium, as someone who's been to a lot of the big, beautiful new stadiums, typically the practice facility's on the property. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. The idea that the players currently practice and play an hour apart is ridiculous. Because on game day, do you want your guys having to get up at 8 in the morning and drive an hour? That's no way to get ready for a football game. You want to be able to live down the street. And so for that investment for the state makes a lot more sense. And I don't know if ultimately they should pay or, you know, maybe you split revenue, whatever it is. But it's much more of an even share and a potential investment with real monetary payoff that could then refill the coffers to then go pay for the education and all the other things that the state pays for versus the city of Richmond, which $500,000 is a lot more significant to. And that was going with. Or through an entity, the Richmond City government, that had a lot less ways to collect money from its citizens. Politics meets sports, but not in a way that makes everyone mad. Yay! So that's something to keep an eye on, the negotiations between the Commonwealth. And as the Richmond mayor, the actual one, not Michael Phillips, stated in that statement that I just read for you, they might have an extra year to do it because the NFL might put the kibosh on camps away from practice facilities anyway. So that is the latest on that. I'm Craig Hoffman. This is a show called Overtime. And on it, next, will be the majority owner of the Washington Spirit, the NWSL team in town, who today announced a new ownership group or a new additional group of investors that included Alex Ovechkin and his wife, Nastya. So I, because I used to work for the Washington Spirit, was able to call up the club and say, hey, can I get Steve on to talk about this? And they said, yeah, sure thing. And so he's coming on next on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.